Anyway, well, want to welcome you guys to this session focused on kind of nutrient management laws and regulations, and just it, more and more so, hopefully, focusing a little bit more about how the Tri-Societies is or could be engaged in the public policy process. We've got a couple of talks to kick us off with, and then we're going to have a panel discussion with a few of you in the room here right now. I put together some goals of kind of for participation in this session, and just to kind of give you guys a little bit of a insight into where my head was at when I submitted this, and kind of four main goals: increased awareness of how the Tri-Society members have engaged in the public process in the past or are right now, offer insight on the anticipated trend in nutrient management laws and regulations, and where we might be going with either a regulatory or a voluntary approach. The third kind of goal for the session is an increased understanding of the roles of the local, federal, and state governments. And then the last one being to provide some insight into the kind of the current political climate surrounding this topic of discussion. To kick us off, we've got Deanna Osmond, and she's going to talk about her work in the water quality trading in the Jordan Lake watershed. So with that, I'll...
It's very nice to have this wonderful, small, loyal audience. Thank you so much. So before I begin my presentation, I want to acknowledge some of my colleagues. Dan Line at NC State. My two economists are Dana Hoag and Marzi Malibi at Clemson University. So I want to tell you where Jordan Lake is, so you'll have some context for this discussion. It's the upper portion of the Cape Fear River Basin. The Cape Fear River Basin runs through hog country, but the upper portion of it, as you can see, has a lot of cities. And the reservoir at the bottom of Jordan Lake watershed is a drinking water reservoir for at least 250,000 people, and during drought years, it can become a reservoir for over 500,000 people. And the problem is that our drinking water standard is 40 milligrams per liter of chlorophyll A. I think actually that's micrograms. And we exceed that over half the time. So this is a well-algaed lake, as they like to say. And that causes taste and odor problems. I know that because my drinking water comes from this lake. And they're also very concerned about harmful algal blooms. They haven't had any yet, but they're not sure what causes them and why regular algae start producing toxins. So they have a lot of concerns. So the solution was to reduce nitrogen and phosphorus, right? That's generally the solution that everybody has for changing water quality. And they put together a set of rules that affected both point source and non-point source. And they said, depending on your sub-watershed, you have to reduce your nitrogen by 0 to 35%, and phosphorus 0 to 5%. Now I want to talk a little bit about the land use, and I know I'm supposed to use the pointer because this is being recorded. We have Greensboro, Chapel Hill, Durham, and parts of Cary. They're all rapidly urbanizing. This area, as they urbanize, are primarily taking forested lands out of production, which is the green part, and I can't find, here we go. The green color, I don't know how well you can see that. And then this beige color is all the agricultural lands, and it would suggest that it's 100% pasture and hay land. That's not true. We know from other surveys that it's about 30% cultivated acres, generally no-till, and the rest is hay and pasture. But the thing that makes this watershed particularly interesting is they have a regulatory framework that is promoting water quality trading. There are a number of large federal groups such as USDA and EPA that also promote water quality trading. And a little bit about water quality trading. So for those of you that are very familiar with it, this won't seem new, but for those of you that aren't as familiar with it, it's basically modeled after point-to-point trading, that is to say sulfur dioxide. It is a neoliberal strategy, which means it's a market-based solution for nutrient pollution. It allows one entity to buy their nutrient credits from another entity. And I'll talk about those entities in a minute because it really affects what's going on in Jordan Lake. It may not reduce nutrient pollution. That's something that a lot of people don't understand. It depends on how the trading is structured. It simply lowers the cost of compliance for the entire program. So that's really important. So as I mentioned, we have rapidly urbanizing areas in Jordan Lake watershed. And the development community also has to reduce their nitrogen and phosphorus, and oftentimes they do it by putting in these basins. Thank you very much for doing that. And rather than building larger basins, if they can keep their basin size smaller, it saves them money, and they're going to then buy the rest of their nutrient credits from the agricultural community. Exclusion fencing to keep the cows out of the stream, or riparian buffers. So the ag is expected to sell to the urban. Okay, so we were really concerned about the regulatory structure, and I worked with a group of scientists on a project, and it had five objectives: determine source contributions, look at agricultural conservation practice effectiveness, do some water quality modeling to see if conservation practices will make a difference, and also the data from the water quality modeling then got passed to the economic group, who wanted to determine the optimal strategy for water quality trading. And then the economist also worked with the anthropologist, who wanted to look at motivators and deterrents for conservation practice adoption in the watershed. So it was a transdisciplinary project. So I'm not going to provide all the results because I'm just trying to set up the framework of the trading. So we found overall that exclusion fencing reduced nitrogen and phosphorus by about 50%, and that you have to use nutrient management all the time. This is not going to be a surprise to all of you in the room for it to be effective, okay? All right, I want to talk a little about the paired watershed design. So we monitored for 8 years. We had these two paired watersheds. It was in the Jordan Lake watershed in the Piedmont area. Again, it's primarily pasture and hayland. We know this from some surveys we've done. And we monitored these two watersheds for 4 years. And the control watershed had beef and dairy. It had some little mixed use, but even when you do a paired watershed, that doesn't matter as long as they're hydrologically responsive in the same manner. It was a typical Piedmont soil, typical chicken litter, got a lot of chickens in this area, very high soil test P, and the stocking rate was slightly higher than we would like. So after 4 years of monitoring, excuse me, we asked one of the farmers, we asked one of the farmers if he'd like to be the treatment watershed, and he said sure, and so he was very gracious. And he runs only beef cows, again, typical Piedmont soil, chicken litter, but we had biosolids for 20 years on a portion of the pastures. For those of you that know anything about soil tests, it's a little shocking, yep. Very high soil tests. The area where the biosolids have been applied for 20 years were over 1,000 milligrams per kilogram. So, Wastewater treatment plant. And so, you know, you might think of that as an urban problem, right? But it's passed on to the ag community, okay? And then his stocking rate was great. He's a really good rancher. So like I said, we monitored for 4 years, and then we showed him the soils test, and we said, sir, you do not need any more phosphorus. You should stop the biosolids right now, and stop applying commercial phosphorus fertilizer also. Okay, yeah, and so he's great. He was great to work with, and he said, fine. And so we did 70 pounds of nitrogen approximately. Oh, I'm supposed to be talking in metric. 75 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per year. And then we put, I have the English units again. We have 10-foot fences, or what, 3 meters, on 65% of the stream acres. So these were very narrow exclusion fencing. And we let him flash graze once or twice a year, which meant he let the cows in so they could eat the woody species so it wouldn't grow trees. All right. So, and then we monitored for another 4 years. Now, the data that I'm showing you is the average, the average of the different nutrient species that you see in total suspended solids for both the control watershed and the treatment watershed. So these are the loads. And then we were able to show, can you see that? Yeah, it's not too bad. We were able to show that total nitrogen was reduced by about 30%, total phosphorus by about 50%, and total suspended solids by about 60%, which was great because this was only a 3-meter fence. We also did the same thing for cropland. I'm not going to spend very much time talking about that because the trading has to do more with exclusion fencing, except to say we were only dealing with one farmer on nutrient management, and we thought we knew what he was doing. We thought he was dropping his nitrogen and not changing his phosphorus. In fact, at the end of the day, we found out he was doing exactly the opposite. It's just a way to say paired watershed is really hard to do because you have to get land use data from the farmers, and it's really, really hard. So let me go on to talk about trading, which is what we're really trying to do here. Okay, so we had these numbers, and we have a paper in JEQ that shows all these numbers. And the Upper Neuse River Basin Association, which represents the urban areas, said we are going to trade with agriculture and we're going to set the credit values, and they hired a civil engineering consulting firm to set the credits for the agricultural community using our paper in JEQ. But fortunately, they worked with us for a while. I still have some concerns about the way they set the credit. So the first thing is they're using the loads from our paper from one site in one Piedmont area of the North Carolina on one location. That's the loads, right, that they're using, which gives me heartburn. On top of that, they used the loads without any reductions. They just said, these are the loads, and we said, at least you've got to reduce them some for uncertainty. And they reduced them a little bit, maybe 10%. But again, that makes me nervous because it's not enough safety factor. A lot of places will require a 2-to-1, 3-to-1 ratio. Then they extrapolated beyond the data. So we had really good stocking rate numbers. Our ranchers were doing what they were supposed to. So they said, well, if a rancher or farmer or somebody else has 3 times as many cattle, then we're just going to say the load is 3 times as high. So it was a linear extrapolation based on stocking rate. I think that if you look at most of the data, a linear, if you literally increase your stocking rate, you are not linearly going to increase your loads. I think it's going to be more exponential than that. So there were these problems with the number. They're trying to maximize the credit that the urban areas can get from the agricultural areas. And last but not least, we said, okay, this practice is not just exclusion fencing, it's also nutrient management. How are you going to ensure that the farmers are complying with nutrient management every year? I know, it's very difficult. So we were very concerned about these values. In addition, there's some other things going on here. So the agricultural economist found that there's only enough agricultural land for 1 year worth of trading between the ag community and the urban community. 70% of all stream areas in this watershed are already buffered. We know that. These are natural buffers. There's also a lot of exclusion fencing. The anthropologists found that the farmers weren't interested in trading because they thought the urban areas ought to fix their own problem, not rely on them. So let me show you some economic data. What's important about this is not so much the numbers, except to say that when the economists looked at the amount of nitrogen reduction possible from riparian buffers, what they found was that there was basically 3,000 kilos of total nitrogen maximum in this watershed And that represents about 1 year of what the urban community needs to trade when they're developing land for houses. And so even if you take a safety factor of 3, you've only got 3 years worth of land. So there's not very much land to do the trading. And that assumes that all the farmers want to trade, which they don't. So this project produced 7 journal articles. The journal articles have been shared with the state regulators. They've been shared with the urban development community. And despite the data, they're still very focused on trading with the urban community. The urban community is still very much interested in trading with the agricultural community. So the project we did was really to get at the benefits of trading, and the science would suggest that trading is not the solution, but trading schemes persist. Dana Hoag, who is our economist, went on to do another paper that was he did a paper for the entire United States, and he showed where the pollution problems existed and where agricultural lands were, and he found that only about 30% of the time maximum do you have this overlap between water quality problem and agricultural lands, so that the and urban areas, so that the urban areas can trade with agriculture. So the problem with water quality trading is that there are lots of schemes that have been developed in the United States. A few have been implemented and are successful, but many more sit on the books. And it's not just water quality trading, but it's how you're doing it. Different kinds of trading schemes exist, and clearly the one in North Carolina is going to be problematic. The last thing is that we've already mentioned that a lot of these are political decisions, and clearly right now there is much more interest in the urban community developing so that they lower their costs. And if I have time for questions.
You got 2 minutes.
Okay. I'll be happy to take any questions. Yes, Nathan?
So I know that you talked, this is about trading between agriculture, mm-hmm. the ag and urban, and mm-hmm. it seems for the current that that's not a great idea. Have you looked at trading amongst like agricultural entities, or maybe what would be your opinion about that?
So the irony of this is part of the concept for trading actually was started by a lawyer in North Carolina in the Tarpamico River Basin, and he suggested a trading. And what ended up happening there was the point source folks figured out it was much cheaper just to fix their problems than to trade with agriculture. So there was never any trading. The latest trading document I've seen that's come out, which I think the most realistic thing is letting the development community in the urban areas trade with the point source people. And then also you have consortium of all of the communities in Jordan Lake watershed, the urban communities, trading with each other. I mean, that's a much better cap and trade kind of program, and because it mimics more closely kind of the air emissions than trying to trade with ag. And so they do have that in there, and we'll see what happens. But they can't get it out of their mind that ag is just this wonderful resource. Yes, sir?
Do you have any suppositions about whether or not this would have played out differently if you had had fewer landowners and larger swaths of land? Previously, I was an extension agent in Piedmont, North Carolina, and there are many, many small swaths.
Yeah, you know what the problems are. I don't know. The problem is, as you know, the urban areas are where the small farms are too. But that's a good question.
What are the examples of where you mentioned there's some that have
they love the example from Ohio. So there was a cheese making factory, right? That had some, and then they worked with the farmers to reduce their pollutants, and so that was a win-win. But, and then there's a temperature trading one in Washington, but other than that, not too many. Thank you.